I heard hardware's cool, but don't know where to start. I heard that you can use JS or the Arduino language. Oh, all my friends are making bots. But I'm still here wondering where to start. With software and figuring out how it all connects. And we love tools, but this is definitely new. So we brought in a guest now to clear our questions away.
Yeah.
Got through it. Welcome to Tools Day, a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we have a guest on the show, as you may have figured out from our intro song and the topic. So welcome to the show, Suze Hinton.
Hello, thanks for having me.
We're super excited to have you because this is a topic that I'm like, I fangirl about you over. So Suze is a tech evangelist at Microsoft. She does a lot of work with open source hardware, specifically with Node.js and how you mix that with hardware. There's like a ton of different ways you can do this. She was kind of talking about it before we started recording, and I'm already like, okay, pause, save these notes for the show. It's going to be really good. She also is I consider notable Twitch streamer who does live coding. She's going to be humble about this, but I think it's super cool that she does this and just like talks you through doing these really cool projects on Twitch. Just like the new hotness for all the kids these days.
And that's twitch.tv/noopcat.
Which I learned, I thought it was Noopcat. Both are great.
Thanks so much.
So, hi!
Hey! Thanks for the plug. It's good. It's like super weird when you're just sitting in a room talking about what you're coding, and you end up just making so many mistakes, which I think is my favorite bit, because everyone loves to correct you in the chat. So I think it's like entertainment more for the people watching, because they get to like point out your typos.
Oh, I can't wait to do like a fully live coded talk at CSS Conf in like 2-3 weeks. Yeesh. So hardware is something that we keep seeing more and more in the web dev community unexpectedly, because now you can use JavaScript to code electronics projects with. And that's super exciting because it's like a syntax we understand. People are using Node in their web projects, so you can translate those skills into hardware. If somebody wanted to just like get started from A to B and they have web experience but no hardware experience, like, what would you recommend?
Yeah, it can be intimidating when you think about first starting, but I think that, as you said, like, hardware has come such a long way now. You don't have to be really, really good at C or C++ or like really low level languages like that to get started. And kind of similar how if you knew JavaScript, now that we have Node.js, you know, you can write both front-end code and back-end server code. You can do exactly the same with hardware. And so if you can write Node.js, then you can pretty much apply that to lots of different approaches to interacting with hardware. And so the first approach that I would recommend is finding an Arduino board, like, or a microcontroller board that is able to run Node.js directly on the device. That way it kind of makes more sense. You feel like you've just got a smaller computer sitting on your desk, but it has these extra capabilities built in. And so I usually recommend working with either the Espruno, which is a board that is able to take your JavaScript and convert it into a lower level language for you, or you can use something like a Tesla board, and the Tesla 2 actually runs your Node.js on the board itself, which is really, really cool. So they're the two scenarios that I recommend getting started with. There are other ways to do things where you can control the device remotely, but most people kind of want to have it running on the device. So that's usually the nicest experience.
So quick question for those of us who are completely new, what is an Arduino board and what is a board?
And what is this Bruno board and Tesla?
What do these words mean?
Yeah, they're really good questions. It's sort of hard to know, like, where do I aim through for the levels. But so really what it comes down to is you're used to typing on a really, really fast computer, and it has like a GUI, and it has like a sound card so you can plug your headphones into it, and you know, we can chat on Google Hangouts, for example, and you're just used to being able to accomplish anything you like, and there's some really, really nice abstractions on it. If you want to think about an Arduino board or any of the other kind of microcontroller boards, just think of it as a smaller, much, much slower, dumber computer. So instead of...
you're programming it, really.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of having this really high-powered device, you have something that doesn't require a lot of power, it doesn't run super fast, but it's much simpler to work with. So I think that it is funny when people get intimidated by a device that's not nowhere near as powerful as the device that they wrangle every day when they're working with web development, for example. You have to think about performance in the browser and like network requests and refactoring like huge stacks of code. Whereas on a microcontroller, you have like sometimes just kilobytes to work with. So, you know, it can actually be even simpler than your day job.
That's wow. I've never thought of hardware programming as simpler than my
I haven't
day
either.
Job. I think for a lot of people, the restriction of kilobytes sometimes seems scary, because sometimes on the front end side, we just kind of add in these libraries and it just does all the work for us. And so this kind of programming to a kind of a lower level is sometimes like, wow, I actually have to know what I'm talking about, which is frightening to me sometimes. I feel like I make things up half the time and hope for the best. So what was it like for you to jump in and make your... Well, first off, what was your first hardware project? And what was it like making that transition over to hardware versus just software?
That's an awesome question. This is going to be so embarrassing for me to admit, actually. So I got into hardware when Flash... like Macromedia Flash or Adobe Flash was still...
Yes, that's how I got into web.
Yeah, exactly. So I bought an Arduino board and I was like, I'm going to make a thing with it. And then I ended up going to like a workshop and we spent like a day just playing with the stuff. And the workshop was run by an electronics place in Australia that actually already put out really cool additions that you can buy for your board. So they were seriously the experts. And the first thing I did was I connected like a little twisty knob, which is called like a potentiometer, like kind of wow. Like a volume dial. Like I, yeah, the big word.
That's a good one.
I plugged a dial into the Arduino, and I, when you turn it, it would change the color and the size of a circle in Flash. And so that was my first Ooh. Thing. And I was like, oh my God, I'm controlling a thing on the computer with this separate device. And like, this is insane. And so I was really, really excited about it.
I feel like Flash is so far stretched now from the web dev that we know that I don't think about even the possibility of connecting hardware with Flash.
Yeah.
But why not?
Yeah, I was one of those weirdos that did everything in Flash. Like I would make fake malware and put it on people's computers and then like set up like a Windows scheduler to launch it like at random times. Like I did everything in Flash. It was totally my crutch.
That's amazing. So you mentioned two boards. You mentioned the S-Bruno board and the Tesla board. And I feel like when people hear about electronics, they probably know about the Raspberry Pi and the Arduino boards. Are these versions of those or are they different?
That's an excellent question. Yeah, that comes up a lot. So the Raspberry Pi and the Arduino are probably the most popular like advertised boards for working with hardware. So there's a pretty big difference because the Arduino board is a very low power device. It runs at 8 megahertz, which is really, really slow, right? Yeah. So that's kind of what you have to work with. You have on the Arduino Uno, you have 32 kilobytes of flash. Whereas when you look at a Raspberry Pi, that's a fully working computer that runs Linux on it. So you don't necessarily have an operating system running on the Arduino, but you do on the Raspberry Pi. And I would say that that's the biggest difference, is just like horsepower, but also being more familiar with, if you're used to Linux, then you can just shell into your Raspberry Pi and you're just interacting with a computer that you're used to.
Yeah.
So
what are the S-Bruno and Tesla boards that you had mentioned?
Yeah, that's a really good question too. So the Tesla board technically runs Linux on it, and it runs a version of Linux you might not be used to working with, which is called OpenWRT. and
isn't that the router software?
Yes, board? Exactly. Yeah, so that's the Linux that runs on router software. And I think it's a really good match, because what I love so much about the Tessel is that it has Wi-Fi capability, which the Arduino doesn't have out of the box unless you install like an extra kind of add-on to it. And so
it's like a physical shield.
Yes, it's called a shield because it kind of like clips over the top like a little backpack or a shield, which is cool. But with the Tessel, you get Wi-Fi out of the box, you can deploy your code with Wi-Fi. And my friend Nick Herr actually wrote a module for the Tessel that you can install, and it will turn your Tessel into a Wi-Fi access point, which is awesome. So imagine if someone connects to your Wi-Fi, you can just pop up a browser and people can start like interacting with whatever you're serving to them, which is really, really cool.
So does it need to be on a connection, or is that kind of like how your camera can connect to your phone through like a Bluetooth or like a LAN area connection?
Yeah, so you can connect to your Tessel via like both being on the same Wi-Fi, or you can actually connect to its Wi-Fi that it's putting out, similar to your phone, I guess, like a Wi-Fi hotspot. Oh, yeah,
that's so cool.
It's super cool.
This blew my mind. I recently got a like a camera, a physical camera. It's called the Fujifilm X100T, and I haven't bought an actual camera in ages, but now when you buy a digital camera, they have their own Wi-Fi connections. Like they create their own hotspots. And to me, this is like, oh, technology. So now you can like just, yeah. But, oh, okay. So that's what I was just like kind of like blown away by. And you can do this with Nick's software.
Yes.
Super cool.
It's super, okay, super cool.
So I have a quick question. So if the boards have no OS, how are you running software on it? What's the process behind this?
I guess it comes down to like your definition of operating system, right? So I guess on the Arduino, for example, that's more of a rudimentary microchip, right? And so it basically has a clock, and it just runs the clock, and you're able to run the assembly code on each kind of clock cycle. I hope that makes sense, because that's like pretty low level, but that's how that works. And so when you write your C++ code, it compiles it down to assembly, and there's like a bootloader that runs on it where you can actually send opcodes to it, and it can understand that, oh, I'm trying to put new code on the device and things like that. So
is there a compiler from Node to assembly? Is that what's happening behind the scenes when you're talking about writing Node for the Arduino boards, or how does that work?
So generally, there's not really anything that will compile it down to C++ for Arduino boards, but there are boards that run lower level languages like Lua or something like that, that you can kind of easily transpile JavaScript to. So that's how some of the boards work. So that can work. And for those that can't run Node.js on the board itself, you can still interact with it by running Node on your computer or running Node in the cloud. And then as long as you're able to connect to it via USB or Wi-Fi, you can actually kind of have this API layer where you can just send the correct bytes down the tube and it can interpret those bytes and do something for you.
Okay, got it. Second question. You mentioned assembly. I've been seeing WebAssembly pop up a bunch of my Twitter streams recently. Are these related? And if so, how does that work?
So,
have you seen this? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I've seen WebAssembly. I wouldn't say that they're related.
Okay.
Partially because, okay, so the bytecode that gets compiled for the browser to run, right, that's being created for the specific processor that you're running and the specific, I guess, engine that's running in the browser for it to be able to run that code, right? So when you compile code for, let's say, an Arduino or something like that, you're compiling it for a different architecture. But, I mean, it runs similarly in the way that that kind of code runs much more efficiently than a higher level language that's interpreted, such as JavaScript. So I'd say that they're probably the similarities.
Okay.
Speaking of interpreting things, I'm going to try slyly transition here. As all good JavaScript writing formats and things, there are frameworks that you can use to help you write specifically for hardware. And one that I've heard about a lot is Johnny 5. It gives you a lot of capabilities that are specific to electronics and kind of just make it easier. They're like a wrapper over some of the functionality that you would want. What are these frameworks? What are their benefits? What are some that I probably don't know any except for that one.
I think that you're already ahead because Journey 5 is a really, really popular one. So, and the main reason why it's so popular is it's been out for a while. It's got a lot of contributors to it, so it's very high quality. And it has support for so many different boards and so many different ways of connecting. So Journey 5 interfaces with boards over USB, boards over Wi-Fi, and boards over Bluetooth, which is super cool. And so if you go on like Journey-5.io, you can see just the breadth of boards that are supported, including Tessel. Even though Tessel runs Node on the device, you can still use the Journey 5 framework on Tessel, which is super cool. And so that kind of, as you said, provides a wrapper, and it provides like a unified API. So no matter what board you're on, you tend to be writing the exact same code. So if you want to blink a code, blink a light on an Arduino Uno, it's exact same code as blinking a light on a different microcontroller with the Journey 5 framework, if that makes any sense. And
okay, interesting. Is that like PhoneGap where you can write it in like web language and then it transpiles it into like iOS native and Java?
Yeah, technically it would be very, very similar. I think there's a few things that you swap out with PhoneGap for each platform, right? And it would be similar for Journey 5. So let's say you have a special location where you're putting the light in, and that's called like pin 13. There might be a board that doesn't have that many pins, so you plug it into pin 2 instead. So you're just swapping the numbers or their identifiers over, but the rest of the code is the same.
Okay, cool. What are your favorite like functions from any of these frameworks?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm just thinking.
Specific functions, wow.
Yeah, no, I like this question, I like it. So
this is like the convince me to use one thing.
So there's one really good function in Journey 5 that I love. And what it is a lot of the time when you're plugging in different sensors, you'll get different like values, and sometimes they're not calibrated to be the values that you want. So a very standard thing with analog sensors is, let's say you've plugged in a like a light sensor, right? And that's called a photoresistor. So it measures the light level that's in the room, and it will send you a number that's, you know, correlated to that brightness. And so usually that number is between 0 and 1024, and that's, or 1023, and that's not a very useful range, right? So in Journey 5, when you're reading an analog sensor such as a photoresistor, you can actually tell it to map it to an actual value that'll be useful. So sometimes that can be, oh, maybe I want it to be between 0 and 10, or what if I want it to be between 0 and 255 if I'm like changing color values or something like that. And so instead of having to do all the math yourself, you can just essentially tell it to map live, and then you're just getting that really useful number out. So like those abstractions is what makes these JavaScript hardware frameworks so useful and so friendly to beginners.
Cool.
I feel like that sounded really boring, you know?
No, whenever I hear like anything about sensors, my mind is just blown. I'm like, wow, how can it do all these things?
It's kind of magical.
It feels like witchcraft, really.
I got the Arduino and like the beginner book, just like how to make a light blink. And inside of it, this beginner kit, comes with like temperature sensors and like various things. And it's so cool. Like you can just plug in the temperature sensor and then like hold it with your finger and it automatically detects it and gives this output that you're expecting. But yeah, I could totally see what you're saying by like needing this wrapper function to make it usable, especially when you're relating that to like web, where 255 is the expecting color for any like RGB range. So I
use that mapping all the time just for that reason. But yeah, other cool stuff is just the breadth of devices that you can handle with Journey 5 is probably one of my favorites. So like you can control motors, and you can control lights, and you can read from sensors and dials, and you can push out to like LCD screens as well. And so I think that that's probably my favorite part too, is most of the time if you buy something off the shelf, there's almost always like something that's already been written for you, which I think is awesome.
Cool. What are your favorite like projects that you've built?
I've built the really silly projects. I don't know if you've seen any of them, but I think my favorite one that I did was, it was like this 3D printed bracelet, and it had a pulse sensor in it, so it could sense your heart rate. And if your heart rate got really elevated, it would start texting you pictures of kittens to cheer you up because it assumed you were having a panic attack.
The coolest thing about electronics is it really takes any idea that you have in your head and makes it possible. Because once you have the power to program for a computer, that gives you a ton of capability with Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, connectivity there. And then once you know how to program these devices, you can make something that exceeds that, that you can bring into the real world with you and like take on your day-to-day and make people smile. And, like, it's physical. I miss the physical aspect of like development.
I definitely think that's what makes it fun. Like, you know when people turn up to a hackathon and they're like, okay, I have this API, I'm just going to hit the API, get the results, then I'm going to come up with a fun output. I find that hardware is the same. So like the API results is usually like the results of a sensor or something. And then you're like, okay, I have this output. So like, what is the translation bit in the middle that I'm going to write? And that can even just be shapes in the browser, right, that you're controlling.
That is a great metaphor. I've never thought of it that way. Hardware is API.
Brilliant,
that actually makes a lot more sense in my mind. What?
These are some brilliant thoughts of Susan.
How long did it take you to build that pulse bracelet kitten thing?
Well, I had to do it quick because it was for a weekend hackathon. So I was like the dork that... So I used to live in Las Vegas, and it was a hackathon in Las Vegas, so this story just gets weirder and weirder. And so it was held in the middle of a nightclub during the day, which was super weird. And so they had all these like professional round tables with tablecloths. And then Suze turns up with like this 3D printer in a Pelican case, because the rules were very clear. Like, you couldn't like start it before you actually went in. So I was like, well, I'm going to have to print this bracelet out, so I'm going to bring my 3D printer. So I sat there 3D modeling, and I had a 3D printer and a soldering iron, and people kept coming up to me to take photos and ask me if they were, you know, if they could take photos, and they would lean on the table while I was soldering, and I almost ripped people's heads off because I would just bump the table, and then whatever I was soldering, which was super tiny because it's like this tiny little wrist thing, like it would just like the soldering iron would fly off or the solder would fall off, and I'm like, wow. And so I ended up putting that together over 2 days, and then I had to kind of hook up the text message part of it as well.
Nice. So this is like putting together the 3D printing with the sensors, with the inputs, because you're taking the input from the hardware device, then you're using Node to send over a server connection to your, what is it, like browser, and like Twilio is probably the API that you're using for texting.
Yeah, that's actually really close. So like the device had Wi-Fi on it, and I would just like kind of measure the heart rate for like 5 minutes. And then if it stayed elevated, then it would just use like a really simple Arduino Wi-Fi library, which, you know, Arduino has like a whole ecosystem of libraries out there. So I don't have to write a lot of code in C++ even when I do. And so it hits my Node server, and it's literally just an endpoint. It's just like /sendkitten or whatever, right? And then, and then...
Best name.
Yeah. And so the Node.js server is just waiting for that endpoint to be hit. And then it will just get a picture and then hit up the SMS protocol to do that. So whether that's Twilio or, you know, whichever API you want to use.
So the best way to learn any technology is really to get your hands on it and practice. But people often struggle to come up with ideas. What would you recommend to somebody who was wanting to build something with electronics but didn't really know how to get started?
Yeah, this is something we see a lot when we're teaching people stuff in workshops, and they'll say, great, I blinked a light. Now I have no idea of what I'm going to do next. And so we tend to break it down for them and say, well, take an input, which could be a sensor, take an output, which could be something like a motor, and come up with a story in between. So it's just like you only have to then come up with three things, really, right? Input, output, and the cool story in between.
That is super cool. All right, so we're running a little bit low on time, but I wanted to ask you, are there any like web communities out there that you go to for technical advice, guides, or where would a new person of hardware go to find more information?
I'm so glad you asked. Yeah. So the Node.js hardware community, we call ourselves the NodeBots community.
NodeBots?
Yeah, which I really love. And so if you go to nodebots.io, you'll find some information on our International NodeBots Day that we hold every year, where all of us around the world actually in our cities, we all hold workshops, and it's the most fun that I've ever had with robots.
When is it?
It's usually in July. So we got to see if the New York one is happening this year.
I'm going to make it happen. I really want to do this. That sounds amazing.
So that's like a good opportunity for you to get your feet wet. But also if you go to nobots.io, you'll also find information linking you to how to get started and everything. There is a Gitter channel as well. So if you use Gitter, I don't know how to pronounce that. we do have chat with that as well. And then a lot of the time, each city's like JavaScript meetup usually has some kind of like NodeBots channel in their Slack or whatever, which I know is true for NYC. So
that is awesome. This is a great little site.
Yeah. Are there any other frameworks or tools that you use to help you with your hardware development or learning?
Yeah, there's a few tools that you can use to take the training wheels off. So if you're kind of comfortable with Node.js stuff and you want to kind of blend it with some C++, that tends to be how I do more of kind of the more serious stuff that I do. There's some really good tools out there that allow you to compile. You can use the text editor of your choice and you can compile and upload that code to your board. And so I use a really good one called Platform.io. And I absolutely love it because it does the compilation and the uploading. And if you don't have to like download all of these new boards and install them and things like that. If you just tell it what board you're using, it goes and fetches all of that for you. So it's really, really nice. So I use that in my flow when I'm writing C++, which is really, really cool. I wrote a JavaScript tool called AVRGirl. Which does kind of the uploading part of the C++ once it's compiled. And quite a few people use that in like browser IDEs and things like that because it works in the browser. So that's another tool to get started with if you want to like help people create stuff with JavaScript hardware, which is cool. Another one I really like is usually when you're posting data to, let's say, to and from the device, so you can control the device remotely. Usually they're using the MQTT protocol. So most devices don't use HTTP, they use MQTT. And if you ever wanted to set up your own MQTT server, there is a really good Node.js one called Mosca, and it's by Matteo Colina, and that allows you to kind of set up a server to communicate with devices too. So a lot of these tools are kind of like once you've got the training wheels off, but honestly, like the JavaScript scene has so many really awesome tools. Once you've kind of gotten through the first sort of hello world of hardware.
Awesome.
Sweet, that was great. any shout outs you want to make before the show ends?
I wasn't ready for that.
You can say no.
Actually, just shout out to the NodeBots community, because honestly, like, I was playing with this stuff on my own and I was doing it with Flash, and then when Flash became not cool, I started doing it with Node.js, but I was having to like roll everything myself. So you would have to write your own C++ code and then write the Node.js code from scratch. And the NodeBots community has just been so passionate about saying no one should have to feel in the dark, no one should have to like feel like they're stupid and they can't do hardware. And so, you know, everyone's just so excited to help each other but also write really nice abstractions. And honestly, like, I wouldn't have had the success with hardware in my recent years without it. Like, I still would have been on forums where people can be kind of patronizing. I just wouldn't be part of this nice community.
Oh, that was so sweet. I love that. Community is so important. It's really everything. So if you're interested in getting started with hardware, we're going to link to all these resources in our show notes. Check out the NodeBots community. It sounds like a really cool group of people, and I've met some of them in various cities that I've lived in, and they are really great. If you enjoy the show, we have a Patreon now. You can go to patreon.com/toolsday if you want to support the show. And yeah, thank you again, Suze, for being our guest this week. We'll see you next time.